Let the words of my mouth and meditation of my heart be always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. The psychiatrist who was testing me explained that he would ask a series of questions, and I was to respond quickly, saying the very first thing that popped into my head. I told him I was ready for the first question. He said, "Here it comes." The question was, "What was my earliest good childhood memory?" In a split second, I responded, "Cathead biscuits." The psychiatrist repeated my response instead of moving on to the next question. He said, "Cathead biscuits?" I said, "Yes, Cathead biscuits." But he paused there for a moment, and then he asked me another question. "What is a Cathead biscuit?" Well, it became painfully clear to me that this boy was from the North. And he was. He had been born and raised in New Jersey. Well, I explained to him that while my father was away in the Second World War in combat in the Pacific Theater, my mother and I stayed with his parents and his seven brothers and sisters, various aunts and uncles and others on their farm in Oconee County. At the time, a young kid on the farm thought everything was wonderful. I didn't realize exactly how hard times were in those days and how everybody's energy was devoted to the production of food somehow or another. But from my point of view, we were all fed and fed abundantly. Now, sometimes the entree might be a little lean, the chicken's a little thin, but one thing we always had on that table in abundance was Cathead biscuits. The biscuits were the last food to be brought to the table. They arrived hot, so hot that we could barely pick them up, but pick them up we did. And almost in a second motion, we grabbed our knife and a big thing of fresh churned butter was sitting there on the table. We put a big slop of fresh churned butter in the middle of that biscuit, put it down, blowing on our fingers. Then the rest of the food was passed. As soon as nobody could eat until everybody had food on their plates. But as soon as that happened, I grabbed that Cathead biscuit and bit into it, and it was so good. And you can know that you have done just right, just the right amount of butter when it runs down your arm when you bite the biscuit. Inevitably, my old Uncle Carl, the curmudgeon, always complimented the cook, my grandmother, with these words, "Ella Maud, manna from heaven." At that point, I didn't know what manna from heaven was. I hadn't heard that story yet. But if manna from heaven was anything like Grandma's Cathead biscuits, then I wanted to have some every day of my life. And when I was with them, that was the case. For one or two meals, maybe three. So whenever I hear stories about manna, as we hear today, this probably should be called Bread Sunday, because we hear the manna from heaven story in Exodus, we hear it in our psalm, and then we hear it in the gospel reading. But Jesus is trying to explain to the folks exactly what manna is, and I don't know if they ever understood it. Grandma's Cathead biscuits were delicious, but they would lose their oomph overnight. A Cathead biscuit, 24 hours later, well, we'd take them and throw them at the chickens and everything, and if you hit one, it'd knock the chicken over because they were that hard. They didn't last very long. Just like the manna, it had a very definite shelf life. But a Cathead biscuit about 10 o'clock in the morning after breakfast, go into the pie safe, and there's a stack of them in there, get one out, put your finger in the middle and kind of make you a little pocket, and pour sorghum syrup in there. Yes, if this is the bread of life, I believed it because it was so, so good. Absolutely spectacular. At the moment, I didn't realize I had invented a jelly donut. I should have marketed that. I could have been a rich man today. Used to love to watch Grandma make those cat head biscuits, but I didn't pay all that close attention to exactly what she was doing. And years later, I developed a love of cooking, and I asked her for her cat head biscuit recipe. She told me this: "It's easy, Joe. Flour, lard, also known as shortening in this day and time, sugar, buttermilk if you have it, butter if you have it, and the rest is up to you. No measurements, no details, but one thing is critical. The dough is rolled up in a ball, not with a cookie cutter, and then it is baked. And the critical part of making the perfect cat head biscuit is that the size when it comes out baked is the exact size of a cat's head. It's an art form. She was a genius at it." Well, manna from heaven. To a kid, I agreed with Uncle Carl that the cat head biscuits were manna. We just hear that this little story about the complaining, whining Israelites once again needing something to eat, and God once again responds. What we don't hear in this Exodus version is later on in Exodus 16, the Bible actually tells us what manna was like. It says this: coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. Sounds pretty good to me. The name manna comes from the word manhu, which means, and you heard it in the reading, when they saw the stuff on the ground, white stuff, and they said, "What is it?" Well, that's what manna means. Translated, manna means, "What is it?" Well, that's been a mystery for a long time, hundreds of years, but in recent times, there is such a thing called manna, and the Bedouins on the Sinai Peninsula use it as a staple in their diets. It comes from this. Plant lice that feed on the local tamarisk trees secrete this stuff, which is yellowish white, rich in carbohydrates and sugars, and it is very good for you. It is good stuff. But because it is sugar and carbohydrates, it decays quickly and attracts ants. So it doesn't last more than one day. There's an explanation. We have an explanation of what this manna is. It was real. This is real stuff that you can get today if you want to venture out into the Sinai Peninsula. Now, that's the good news. The bad news always is when someone comes up with an explanation or what have you about a miracle, a lot of people get all bent out of shape because they think it takes away from the miracle. Well, okay, if that's your opinion, but where does it say that manna has to come from out of nowhere, out of thin air, to be a miracle? The miracle is that God heard the complaining of hungry people and fed them, if you will, bug juice, food that they probably never would have thought about eating. But this is bread from heaven, as Jesus is talking about it. So what makes something bread from heaven? Well, it's not the thing itself. The critical part of this is the one who sent it. As Hamlet would say, that is the question. And how we answer those questions for ourselves has a lot to do with how we sense God's presence in our life. If our manna has to drop straight out of heaven like a perfect cat head biscuit, then chances are we're going to go hungry a lot. When you don't get the miracle we're praying for, you're praying for, sometimes we start complaining, start whining, and then the worst possible thing is think that God's not there. On the other hand, you're willing to look at everything that comes to you as coming from God, then there will be no end to the manna in your life. A can of Vienna sausages will be manna. Cat head biscuits, manna. Bug juice, manna. Nothing will be too ordinary to remind you of God. When you go to bed hungry and wake up to find a fine flaky substance on the ground, you'll say, "What is it?" Someone will say that the Lord has given you something to eat. You will believe it. You will say, "Thanks be to God." Then figure out how to eat the stuff. It's not what it is that counts, but the one who sent it. And the miracle is that God is always sending us something, everything, to nourish us. Day by day, God is known to us in the simple things that sustain our lives. A little bread, a little wine that we'll have in a few moments. Some love, breath, our lives. These are absolutely simple things that, yes, are here today and gone tomorrow. After Jesus fed the 5,000, as we are well aware, they stuck to him like glue. The miracle of the loaves reminded them of the manna stories they had heard. They had all heard those stories since they were children. And they thought they had their own Moses to work wonders for them. And so to test him, they asked Jesus to prove himself by producing some more bread from heaven on the spot. They wanted right then and there cathead biscuits dripping with butter. But Jesus knew that they needed more than that, a lot more than that. What they needed, what they absolutely had to have, was Jesus himself, and he gave himself to them. Their problem was they wanted miracle food to eat, not a relationship with Jesus. But he honored their hunger as he corrected them. He told them in no uncertain terms, it wasn't Moses who gave it to them, it was God who gave it. And God who gives the true bread from heaven, the bread that gives life to this world. "Give us this bread always," they said. And that's when he let them know, "You're looking at the bread. It's right in front of you. I am the bread of life," he told them. Jesus is God's manna in the wilderness, the one who reminds us day by day by day by day that we live because God provides not what we necessarily might want, but exactly what we need. Some bread, some wine, some breath, some love, and more importantly, a relationship with this man, the incarnate one who comes from heaven to bring life to the world. So, the prayer for me most mornings is, "Our Father, give us this day your daily bread." Amen.